You know, there's a very specific emotional life cycle that every New Yorker goes through when they decide it's finally time to buy a home.
Oh, I know it well. It usually starts with this burst of pure optimism, right?
Exactly. You're walking through the West Village on a crisp Saturday morning, or maybe you're out in Long Island looking at a sprawling backyard and you think, you know, I can do this. I'm an adult. I have a job. Let's buy some
And
property.
then you open Zillow.
Right, then you open Zillow, and the optimism is immediately replaced by a very specific kind of nausea.
Yeah.
Because suddenly you aren't just looking at bedrooms and bathrooms, you're staring at a wall of terminology that feels designed to keep you out. You see co-op board approval, flip tax, jumbo loan.
And price tags that look like international phone numbers.
Yes, exactly.
It's true. I mean, the New York real estate market isn't just a market, it's a fortress. And it has its own physics, its own language, and, well, its own gatekeepers.
Which is really why I was so interested in the source material we have for today's deep dive. It's a guide provided by Jet Direct Mortgage. It's titled New York Conventional Mortgage, a Complete Home Financing Guide, and it's dated February 20, 2026. And I have to admit, my first thought was, conventional mortgage, that sounds incredibly boring.
It sounds beige. It sounds like the vanilla ice cream of finance.
Right. But as I read through this guide, I realized that in the absolute chaos of New York real estate, boring might actually be a code word for powerful. It seems like the standard, you know, vanilla loan is actually the secret weapon for navigating all the madness.
That is exactly the right takeaway. We tend to fetishize the exotic financial instruments, you know, the obscure loopholes or the highly specialized government programs. But this guide makes a really compelling argument that the standard conventional mortgage is actually the skeleton key.
Because it's versatile.
Exactly. It's often the only tool versatile enough to handle the structural weirdness of New York housing.
So that's our mission today. We are going to decode the conventional mortgage. We're going to figure out why the standard loan is the hero of the story, especially if you, our listener, are trying to buy a co-op or a multi-million-dollar property.
It's a great mission.
But before we get into the strategy, we have to define our terms. When we say conventional, what are we actually saying? Because to me, conventional just means normal.
Well, it's easiest to define it by what it is not. A conventional loan is not backed by the federal government.
So it's not the FHA and it's not the VA.
Correct. FHA and VA loans are government-insured products. They're designed with a safety net provided by the taxpayer, essentially. If you default, the government steps in to help the lender. A conventional loan is a private transaction. It's funded by private institutions, banks, credit unions, mortgage lenders like Jet Direct.
But here's where I get stuck. If I'm a buyer and I see government-backed versus private, my brain just says the government one is safer or maybe easier to get. If a conventional loan doesn't have that safety net, doesn't that make it riskier?
It makes it riskier for the bank. And that is the crucial distinction,
Oh.
right? Because the lender is taking on more risk. Without that government insurance, they have to adhere to a very strict standard of quality. These loans essentially have to be perfect so they can be bundled up and sold on the secondary market to two entities you've definitely heard of, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
The giants of the mortgage world.
The giants. They set the standards. Now, this distinction matters for you because of one word: flexibility.
Flexibility.
Yeah.
Oh.
Government loans are great, but because they are taxpayer insured, they come with a rigid rule book. They have very specific requirements about the actual condition of the property.
Like the paint can't be peeling kind of rules.
Exactly. Safety hazards, handrails, peeling paint. FHA appraisers are looking for that stuff with a magnifying glass. If the property isn't perfect, the loan might not close.
And conventional loans.
Conventional loans are much more concerned with the value of the property and the creditworthiness of the borrower. They aren't going to kill a deal because of a chipped banister or a scuff on the wall.
Which brings us directly to the New York factor. Because if you're buying a brand new subdivision house in Arizona, maybe that flexibility doesn't matter. Everything is new, everything is up to code. But New York inventory is, well, let's be polite and say historic.
Historic is a very kind way to put it. You have pre-war buildings, converted factories, old farmhouses in upstate. But the real issue in New York isn't just the age of the building. It's the legal structure. We really have to talk about the co-op conundrum.
I feel like this is where dreams go to die, the New York co-op. I have friends who have lost years of their lives trying to get into these
It's
places.
certainly where a lot of financing goes to die. And the source material highlights this as a major advantage for conventional loans. See, in most of America, when you buy a home, you get a deed. You own the land and the bricks.
Real property, nice and simple.
Right. But in New York City, a huge percentage of the housing stock is cooperative. When you buy a co-op, you are not buying real estate. You're buying shares in a corporation that owns the building.
Right.
And those shares come with a proprietary lease that lets you live in, say, apartment 4B.
Okay, wait. So technically, if I buy a co-op, I'm not a homeowner. I'm a shareholder.
Legally, yes.
Yeah.
And this breaks the brain of many government loan programs. FHA and VA programs are built around the concept of real property. While they can do co-ops in theory, the building has to be on a specific approved list, and the red tape is just enormous.
And I assume the co-op boards themselves have an opinion on this.
Oh, absolutely. Co-op boards are notoriously protective. They want financial stability. They know that FHA loans often allow for lower credit scores and lower down payments. So if you walk in with an FHA pre-approval, the board often views that as a weak offer.
So if I fall in love with a pre-war gem in the West Village and I walk in with an FHA loan, I'm basically dead on arrival.
You likely wouldn't even get past the broker, let alone the board interview. The conventional mortgage is designed to handle that share loan structure. It's standard procedure for them. So in New York, conventional isn't just a choice. For many neighborhoods, it's the only key that fits the lock.
That's a really crucial insight. It's about the vehicle fitting the terrain. But there's another layer to this New York problem that the source mentions. The price.
The sticker shock.
Yes, the sticker shock. The source material talks about conforming versus jumbo loans. Now, to me, jumbo sounds like a marketing term for popcorn or a hot dog size. But in lending, this is a hard line, right?
It is a very hard line. The conforming limit is a dollar amount set by the federal regulators. If your loan amount is under that cap, you are a conforming loan. You get the standard rates, the standard automated underwriting. Life is simple.
If you go $1 over,
you enter the world of jumbo. Now, in most of the country, the conforming limit is plenty high enough to buy a very nice house. But the guide lists specific counties here. Manhattan, which is New York County, Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau, Suffolk, and Westchester.
High-cost areas.
Exactly. In these places, a starter home might smash right through that conforming limit.
I was looking at listings in Brooklyn just for fun the other day, and I don't think I saw anything under $1 million that had a roof.
Right. So does that mean you can't get a conventional loan? Do you have to go to some boutique bank for the super rich? No. You just graduate to a jumbo conventional loan.
So it's still the same type of loan, just bigger.
Ideally, yes. The source points out that this allows you to finance these high-value properties without having to leave the conventional ecosystem. But, and here's the catch, because the loan is bigger, the risk is bigger.
So do the rules change? If I'm borrowing $2 million instead of $400,000, do they look at me differently?
They look at you closer. The guide mentions that for jumbo loans, the credit requirements are tighter. They might want a 700 or 720 credit score instead of a 620. And they look at reserves.
Reserves. What does that mean?
Cash left over after closing. They might want to see that you have enough liquid cash to pay the mortgage for 6 or 12 months if you lose your job. They want to know you aren't spending your very last dime to buy the house.
That makes sense. Higher stakes, higher scrutiny. But I want to pivot to something in the source that really surprised me. We usually think of a mortgage as something you use to buy the place you live in, your primary residence.
The white picket fence train.
Right. But the guide has this list of eligible property types, and it goes way beyond that. It lists second homes and vacation properties and, interestingly, investment properties.
This is where we move from home ownership to wealth building. And this is where the conventional loan really shines over the government options.
Break that down for me. If I want to buy a cabin in the Catskills for the weekends or maybe a condo out in the Hamptons, I can use a standard conventional mortgage for that.
You can. Government loans like FHA are strictly for primary residences. You have to swear you're going to sleep there every night. Conventional loans acknowledge that people have diverse lives. They allow you to finance that vacation home.
Really?
Yeah. The down payment requirement might be slightly higher, usually 10% for a second home instead of the minimums, but the option is there.
And then there's the investment angle. The guide mentions multifamily homes with up to 4 units.
This is my favorite strategy for people trying to hack the New York market.
Mm.
It's often called house hacking.
I've heard that term thrown around.
Mm.
How does it actually work with a conventional loan?
Let's say you look at a single family home in Queens. It's expensive. And you're paying the whole mortgage yourself. It strains the budget. But if you use a conventional loan to buy a 4-family building, you live in 1 unit and you rent out the other 3.
And the bank is okay with that.
As long as it's 4 units or fewer, it's still considered residential. This is a massive loophole in a good way. you are essentially becoming a landlord and a real estate investor, but you're getting the interest rates in terms of a regular homeowner.
And I assume the rental income helps you qualify.
That's the key. You can use the potential rental income from those other units to help you qualify for the loan. So on paper, you might be able to afford a much more expensive building than you could a single-family house because your tenants are paying a chunk of your mortgage.
That is incredible leverage.
It is. And once you go to 5 units, you're in commercial loan territory. That's a completely different world. Higher rates, shorter terms, massive down payments. The conventional loan creates this sweet spot for the small-time investor to get started.
Okay, so we've established that this loan is flexible, it works for co-ops, it works for investors. It sounds like the magic bullet. But there has to be a filter. They aren't handing these out to everyone.
No, definitely not. Remember, there is no government insurance. The lender is naked on this risk. So they are looking for what we might call the solid citizen borrower profile.
What does that profile look like? Give me the checklist.
First, credit. The source emphasizes a strong credit profile. In the FHA world, you can sometimes get by with a 580 score. In the conventional world, especially for the best rates, you really want to be north of 620, ideally over 700 or 740.
So credit is the gatekeeper. What about income?
Consistent employment history is the phrase they use. They want to see stability. But, and this is a big good, for New York, the guide specifically calls out self-employed individuals.
Which is huge. Half the people I know in the city are freelancers, consultants, or creatives.
And traditionally, those people have a nightmare time getting mortgages because their income fluctuates. One month, they make $20,000, the next month, zero. Banks hate that volatility.
So how does a conventional loan handle it?
Conventional loans have very specific, established guidelines for analyzing self-employment income, usually by averaging your tax returns over the last 2 years.
So if I made $0 2 years ago, but $1 million this year, that might be tricky.
It would be tricky. They love the average. But the key is that it's possible. They aren't saying W-2 employees only. They're saying documented income only. If you can prove it on a tax return, they can use it.
I see. No under-the-table cash counts here.
Lenders have zero sense of humor about cash. If it's not in the bank or on the tax return, it effectively doesn't exist. They also look closely at your existing financial obligations to make sure you can actually handle the new housing costs.
Now, speaking of banks and documentation, let's talk about the actual process. The guide outlines a roadmap. It seems fairly linear. Consultation, property selection, application, underwriting, and closing. But I want to zoom in on step one. Pre-approval.
The most skipped, yet most critical step.
Why is it so critical? Can't I just go scroll through Zillow and go to open houses first? That's the fun part.
You can, but you're just a tourist. In the New York market, speed is everything. Mm-hmm. If you find a place you like, there are likely 3 other people who like it too. If you make an offer and say, I think I can get a loan, let me check. And the other guy has a letter from Jet Direct saying, we have already checked his credit and income. He's good for it. Who gets the house?
The guy with the letter every time?
Every time. It signals to the seller, and remember, sellers, you're nervous too, that you are a sure thing. It turns you from a looker into a buyer.
The source material mentions Jet Direct Mortgage specifically here, and they point out 2 things that facilitate this process. One is an app, Jet Direct Mobile, which, sure, everyone has an app, but they also mention a person, Peter Pescatore.
The COO.
Right. It seemed interesting to me to list a C-suite executive in a general guide. What does that signal to you?
It signals a blend of high tech and high touch. We just talked about how complex New York is. Co-ops, self-employment, jumbo loans. An app is great for uploading your W-2s quickly. But an app can't explain to a co-op board why your freelance income structure is valid.
You need a human for the edge cases.
You need an advocate. Listing an executive with 26 plus years of experience suggests that they aren't just an algorithm processing paperwork, they are structuring deals. In New York, lending is often about storytelling, explaining the borrower's financial story to the underwriter so it makes sense. You need an experienced human to tell that story.
That's a great way to put it. The algorithm gathers the data, the human builds the narrative.
Exactly. And looking at their footprint, they're based in Bohemia, New York. Mm-hmm. They are locals. They also service places like California and North Carolina, which shows their scope. Mm-hmm. But they clearly know the difference between a condo in Nassau and a co-op in Queens.
Which matters.
It matters immensely. A lender from out of state might not even know what a flip tax is. You don't want to be explaining your market to your lender while you're trying to close.
So let's step back and look at the whole picture. We've covered the what. It's a private, flexible loan We've covered the where. It's essential for co-ops in high-cost areas like Manhattan and Long Island. And we've covered the who, the borrower with documented stability.
We have.
It really flips the script on the word conventional. I think before this deep dive, I equated conventional with basic, like the starter pack. But now I'm seeing it as versatile.
Versatile is the perfect word. If you use a government program, you are contorting yourself to fit inside their box. With a conventional loan, the box is big enough to fit your actual life, whether that's being a landlord, buying a vacation spot, or navigating a tough co-op board.
It's strategic.
It is the strategic choice.
So for you listening right now, maybe sitting in a coffee shop, looking at listings on your phone, feeling that rising panic we talked about at the beginning, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over.
Wow.
We often think of government-backed as the safe bet, right? And private as the risky one. But in a market as incredibly unique as New York, is the safe bet actually the one that gives you the freedom to buy what you actually want?
That's a great point.
Maybe the most conventional choice is actually the most strategic. The risk isn't just about the loan terms. The risk is losing the property because your financing was too rigid.
The risk is missed opportunity. The conventional loan offers the adaptability to survive the New York real estate gauntlet. It might require a bit more documentation, a bit better credit, but in exchange, it gives you the power to act.
So the beige suit is actually a suit of armor.
That's one way to look at it.
Well, there you have it. The conventional mortgage isn't just a loan type. It's a skeleton key for the Empire State. It turns out sometimes the most standard option is actually the smartest one in the room.
Couldn't have said it better.
Thanks for helping us unpack this. And to you, our listener, the next time you see conventional on a term sheet, don't gloss over it. It might just be the thing that gets you the keys. Until next time, keep diving deep.
Keep learning.